The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. Good evening to you. So, you'd like to believe in God, but while you know that the Bible talks about sin these past few weeks, obviously big elephant in the room, you're hearing emphasis on a very specific sin, racism, nothing new, of course, but with a new buzz phrase, the word systemic, and of course that word's been out for years now too, but everyone's using the term systemic racism, and a lot of people just mean different things when they say it, and you're hearing all this and you wonder, would the God of the Bible really agree that all white Americans are guilty of racism and white privilege? Not some, but all guilty of racism and white privilege? And in that same vein, should we be expected to actually kneel publicly to confess that sin? Well, my friend, the Bible does talk about sin. It talks about it a lot. The Bible also clearly identifies racism as a sin. Jesus spoke about it. So did the Apostle Paul. And I don't need to tell you that it's even in one of the Ten Commandments, but all over the Bible. The Bible condemns murder. The Bible would condemn, and God condemns, the vicious murder of George Floyd, whether it was intentional or whether it was just so much violence that it just turned into a murder. Really, it seems like just about every American agrees on that. Certainly, God calls murder a sin. And finally, to wrap up this question, yeah, the Bible also provides examples of people kneeling on various occasions. One such occasion will be in the future. It hasn't even happened yet. The Apostle Paul's letter to the Philippians describes this future event. I'm reading from Philippians chapter 2. He's talking about what we call Judgment Day, the great throne of Christ. And these are believers and unbelievers, every human being that ever existed. He says that the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, of those in heaven, of those on earth, of those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So, let me be as clear and as frank with you right now as I possibly can. I am a sinner. So is everybody else who's ever lived. The only man that ever walked this earth that wasn't a sinner was Jesus, but he was God incarnate. Everyone's a sinner. You who are listening to me right now, you're a sinner. But now I'll go back and just keep this about me again. I am a sinner. I often confess my sin. I've done so before. I'll do so again. However, and I really hope the mainstream mob is listening right now. I confess sins I am guilty of. I do not confess to sins I am not guilty of. As for bowing, I will bow to only one man, Jesus Christ, God incarnate. I will bow in prayer to God. I will not bow on cue for some brand new, politically correct litmus test. But it's not limited to just hearing about bowing. And there are people all over the country being told to bow and confess their white privilege. But sometimes it's not just about that. Sometimes people are just vocally shamed and scolded. Some college-age women in Washington, D.C., after one of the riots last week, they were cleaning off some graffiti, just trying to help the next day. They couldn't do everything. They thought they'd do something. Now, I'm reading now from the Daily Wire so that I get these words exact and I don't paraphrase. I'm reading from the Daily Wire. While they are working to clean the building, a woman identified as Faith Alice Sleeper on Facebook rolls up in a vehicle to lecture them about their supposed white privilege. By the way, Faith Alice Sleeper is not herself African-American, I should say. But nevertheless, she's scolding them about white privilege. Why are you guys removing Black Lives Matter graffiti? Alice asks the girls, videotaping the interaction from her vehicle. We're just trying to take care of the city, one of the girls responds. We tried over there, another girl told the questioner, and it wasn't coming off. Why do you want that to come off? Alice asked. Because it's a federal building, and we care about our country and our city. Alice responded combatively. So you don't care about black lives then? Well, not at all. That's not at all what we're saying, the girls answered. We certainly do care about black lives. Not enough to leave up a message, the woman said. We don't disagree with the message, ma'am, one of the girls said. It's just on the building. We're just trying to clean it. Are you catching on, folks? So now trying to be helpful is also racism. Ladies and gentlemen, please pay attention to a basic racism 104. A racist, by true definition, is one who hates another race and or looks down upon another race and or believes their own race is superior or possibly just believes some stupid stereotype about another race. All of those are examples of a genuine definition of racism. But oh, try explaining that now. We're not allowed to use that definition anymore. Now it means whatever the PC thought police say it means. The rest of us are expected to accept that without question, keep our mouths shut, roll over, and play dead. Well, not me. Not gonna do it. Three women try to help their city by cleaning up. That's a form of evil. Violence, looting, shooting, vandalism, arson, that's not evil. That's being hailed as freedom of speech, legitimate First Amendment protest. I know about the peaceful protests, that's obvious, but ladies and gentlemen, it is the violent protests on the news that are being justified. Oh, they'll throw in a disclaimer. And they went a little too far. I'm not saying they should have shot anybody. I'm not saying they should have killed anybody. I'm not saying they should have burned the whole building down. Maybe just burned half the building down. But, you know, it gets out of hand. But basically, it's a First Amendment right. Isaiah the prophet said, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Sadly, right now, if I wanted to, I could list about 100 shameful, irresponsible, recent public speeches from politicians to media pundits. But instead, I'm going to revisit Chris Cuomo. You gotta love the Cuomo brothers from CNN News Anchor. Yeah, good old Chris. Only recently, and we actually played this on our show last week, but we'll do it again right now. Only recently, he was quite disturbed about people having fun outdoors. He was gravely concerned because they were out having picnics without their masks, without social distancing. Remember?
Fools. I know they want to be out there. Fools, it's not about you. What about the other people? And look, I'm not going to castigate you. That's not my job. I'm not your daddy.
Yeah, I'm glad you're not our daddy, Chris. Well, that was then. This is now. Oh, listen to Chris Cuomo now.
Now, too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets. Persistent and poisonous inequities and injustice. And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Are you catching on? Are you following the bouncing ball? A violent assembly of people do not concern him. People go to the parks without masks on. That concerns him. My friends, my dearest friends, listen to me carefully. If you're white, if you're black, Hispanic, Asian, Jewish, atheist, Muslim, agnostic, if our country continues down this trajectory, characterized by activists fanning flames and a compliant mainstream media whose talking points hold no one accountable, neither thoughtless, mindless, irresponsible, loudmouth elected officials, nor downright criminals and thugs, nor organized fascists who hope people are too stupid to recognize their fascism because they name themselves anti-fascists. Antifa, I know they burn down buildings, and I know they've killed people, and they beat people up, and they call for the overthrowing of our Constitution, but they can't be fascists. How do I know? They call themselves anti-fascists. How could they possibly be fascists if they've named themselves anti-fascists? Clearly they're not fascists. They're hoping you're just that stupid. They're hoping you're just that much of a pea brain. You don't have to be. If this goes on, our republic will become no more than a turned page in a history book, and much sooner than you think. I thought we were headed that way for the next few years, within a few years anyway. Look how much has changed from February till today in June. It started with the pandemic. Even that alone, our lives were not quite the same again. And now look at what's coming right on the heels with it. Ladies and gentlemen, putting it simply, this is no longer sustainable. Certainly prayer and a miracle from God offer hope. I believe in prayer. I believe in miracles from God. I believe in hope, but make no mistake, that is just exactly what it will take. Human beings left to their own devices will destroy this country. But it's never a mistake to be joined once a month by my good friend Jim Barrier, actually in the studio today instead of by phone. Jim Barrier, welcome to our program.
Man, wow, that was awesome. You know what went through my mind at the end there when you're talking? A book I read in high school, and there was a chant. Four legs good, two legs bad. Four legs good, two legs bad. By the end of the book, it was two legs bad, four legs better.
Oh, boy.
So you're talking about anti-fascist and fascist. It's just spinning it. And the sheeple will listen to those rabble-rousers and go, yeah, oh, he's right. Yeah, he's right.
I saw the most priceless cartoon years ago. It showed about 100 people shouting at the same time in unison, I am an individual. Well, listen, you brought a friend with you, and he's a great guy. I've been enjoying getting to know him out of the studio while we're waiting. Introduce your friend.
Let me introduce Steve Hesselbeck, a friend of mine for a long, long time. This is one of my favorite people in the world. He's one of the funniest people I know, but he's also very bright. And since I'm in town and in the studio with you, I called Steve. I said, hey, we were going to get together. I said, why don't you join me and just come on the Bob Siegel Show? And he said, sure. And we're going to hear some things. Steve's got some stories. Steve, welcome.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much. I was pleasantly surprised to hear, A, that you were going to be in town. I always look forward to our visits. And B, very excited that you invited me along to your little show here with Bob. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and C, delighted you could get on a plane and go anywhere, to any town these days.
That's true. Point. Well, you know, of course, the advantage I have is if you say something that upsets everybody, you know, you don't have to come back. He has me on the show. And I always say this, you know, the views expressed here do not necessarily reflect those of Bob Siegel, KCBQ, or the Salem Broadcasting Network.
Unfortunately, if Bob Siegel says them, they do reflect Bob Siegel, and I do have to live here. But I'm glad someone else lives here now. Now I can put the address to your house to go TP if they come near mine. You may just be a handy guy to have around, Steve. Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Thank you.
Steve, quickly tell us what you do. And we're going to get into some issues and talk about stuff, but a little of your background.
I'm a video engineer. I've worked in television most of my career. I learned it in a school that I went to after I graduated from high school. I went to a private college in Florida. And in that school, first day of orientation, I happened to notice while we were waiting in the auditorium, there were television cameras and lights and gadgets everywhere. And as soon as our orientation was over, I ran upstairs to a door that said TV control room and knocked on it and volunteered. And that launched a lifelong career in video and television. And it's really, it's been a blessing. I've been all over the world. I've met some really fantastic people that I'm still in contact with this day. And unfortunately, in my particular career, we were anything to deal with events, whether it's a corporate event or a music festival or sporting event, anything where there's people gathering, that we were the first hit to shut down. And we may be the last industry to kind of get back up to full speed again because of distancing, and you're not sure of, you know, what the fall will bring, as they say. But all in all, it's been a wonderful career. I've been a very blessed man. Thank you.
One of the words that I've heard way too much now is unprecedented, but we are in uncharted waters on with this COVID thing. There's so many opinions, and I want to talk about some of the things. Bob every day publishes how many recoveries there have been from COVID, and that's no one's talking about that, but we just don't know.
Well, and I did it for 2 months. I said I'll do it. I did it the entire month of April, the entire month of May, and I told people where they could go online, and you can find it online easily. But I was bothered that we were always hearing about the deaths, and how many got it. But I've also been saying with what I've been publishing that hey, this is just what we know because they've come to the conclusion that this has really been here since December. The one thing, and I mean the one thing that everybody agrees on, is that this thing is contagious. So if it's that contagious and the high majority of the people still haven't been tested and it's been here since December, then far more people have had it and maybe already recovered or were asymptomatic or they just thought they had the cold. I know it's very serious for people of some ages, but If you factor that in, we're talking about more than a 99% recovery rate. We have virtually shut down our republic for a disease with a 99% recovery rate.
You know, we've talked, maybe last month, the conspiracy theorist in me starts, you know, jumping around thinking, okay, what's behind, what motivates all of this? If we have less than 1% of a mortality rate on this thing, And people like Steve, hardworking people, are put out of work. I have a friend in San Antonio who's on the verge of losing his business, and this kind of stuff. What's behind all that?
Well, and what's interesting is the moment you differ from conventional talking points, you're accused of being a conspiracy theorist.
Of course.
Right. But this is something else we've been trying to clarify in this program. A conspiracy theory is some kind of projection of some secret meeting that goes on in a dark room where they're drinking rum and smoking cigars, and we can't prove it, but gee, connect the dots, gee, follow the money. I'm not talking about that. Just listen to the politicians. They will shamelessly tell you, we plan to exploit this. Mm-hmm. We plan to use this as a reason to reshape society, and it's a socialist. They just tell you that. So that's not a conspiracy theory.
Never let a good crisis just go to waste.
That's it.
Exactly.
That's it. And they are shamelessly admitting it. Now, if I say it and I put it on video, YouTube will remove it. But if you get a politician like a Cuomo or Newsom saying it, well, then YouTube's in kind of a conundrum because they may want to remove it. But then, gee, that's a Democrat saying it. So how can we? So that puts them in a little bit of a conundrum.
I could spend the rest of the day talking about your governor, but I don't want to give him any more time.
Oh, he's not my governor. I may live here.
Oh, hashtag he's not my
not
governor.
My governor, yeah. Well, there is a movement to have a vote of non-confidence and get rid of him. It's hard to be hopeful about that. But, you know, again, we can trust God and we can pray.
Yeah.
There is a movement, but then since Sacramento is the one that has to okay balloting, it's hard to know how that's going to play out.
You said it in your opening monologue that the only hope we have is prayer, and that God will turn the hearts of people.
That's it.
And I've been on that for quite a while now. Believers out there, I don't even care what denomination you are, what you call yourself. If you're a believer in Most High God, we can agree on that. If you believe in Jesus Christ, pray. I've done a lot of revival history. We talk about that stuff. And there have been dark, dark times on the planet and in society. And God's people pray. And whether he raises up an individual or a movement or shakes the earth, if we seek God, I mean, what does it say? If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray. Anybody know that one?
Yeah, it's in Chronicles.
Yeah, so I believe in that. I've believed in that for a long, long time, and I still believe in that. But I believe now, I've been a believer for 51 years. That's pretty profound that I'm that old. But
well, I've never 52, and you could become a deck of cards, Jim.
Oh, great, yeah. Well, then I'll be a joker.
Rim shot.
but now, right now, more than ever in my life, I'm desperate to see that happen. We need this more than I can ever remember. I lived through 1968. They had riots then, and it was justifiable. They were killing people.
Yeah, but you know, and we call that the turbulent 60s. It looks like a picnic compared to what's going on right now.
But I've been through that, been through all of the, you know... But I've never felt like I do now that if something doesn't change, we're doomed as a society. Now, the human race will go on, but this great experiment, the republic, we like to point out this, America is a republic. It's a coalition of states, a united states. We're in big trouble if God doesn't come to our rescue. I vote, you know, we've talked about... I love the Donald. You know, he's a knucklehead. He's obnoxious, but he's doing a great job in that office. But he is not our hope. Ronald Reagan was not our hope.
Our hope is perhaps that it seems to me with all the decks stacked against Trump. See, that's two card decks analogies I've used today. Ah. You got two card deck analogies for the price of one in one show. Tell your friends. The deck stacked against him from this literal coup from the FBI, and again, not conspiracy theory. It's all, we got the emails, we got the memos, we got the text messages, we got confessions in some cases. You look at that, you look at the impeachment, you look at this plan of trying to shame him into not reopening the economy. Mr. President, how many deaths will it take before you quit talking about opening up the economy? Now, just 2 weeks ago, Mr. President... 65 million people are out of work. Do you have anything to say? Because now the Democrat talking point is going to be Trump tanks the economy. And it's very possible that Trump, warts and all, was put in there by God.
It's very possible.
He may or may not be a Christian. He may be another King Cyrus or King Artaxerxes. Mm-hmm. That's my hope. Not in Trump, but in the fact that God may have him there, or if something happens to him, that God could raise up someone. But yeah, without that, I do want to say one thing on behalf of the turbulent 60s, though, and those riots. I just got to be fair. At least when they were rioting, they weren't wearing those stupid masks while they did it.
Yeah, where is the social distancing?
I just can't get off this thing about the masks.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. We talked about it before the show. The time that the three of us were young, I'm going to include you, Steve.
There were
certain things that are understood, even if you weren't a Christian or a churchgoer. There were things that you understood about respect, about the value of a human being, about free choice. There were things that we just knew. This is right. This is wrong. This is fair. This is unfair. That stuff seems to have all gone out the window.
It does. Yeah. And it would take people that are a little older to remember history. And now we are all getting on in years, but we're not all exactly as old. I forgot, though, Jim, did your dad fight for the North or the South? I always get that mixed up.
Wow.
I always get that mixed up.
Wow. You know,
dang.
My dad was stationed on Guam. He joined the Navy at 17 and went into World War II. Okay. So my grandfather, though, maybe. I don't know.
And when your grandfather went to school, did they have any such subject as history yet? Or history
no,
just
they
not
didn't
happened
have history yet. You know, if you want to do this, I can go.
And the Dead Sea was still alive. Okay, that's my last one.
All right, stop
they're,
it.
They're old ones. They're old ones. That's my last one.
I keep waiting for the music. We're not going to have the music in the normal time.
Well, I was going to. Well, I'll tell you what. Since you said that, let's go ahead and go to a break, and we'll play some music for you. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. And now it's time for another episode of Why Mayors Telling Police to Let Looters and Vandals Blow Off a Little Steam Tonight So That They Will Be Calmer Tomorrow Night Only Leads to Greater Violence the Next Night With Your Old Pal, Bob. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Well, you know, it's quite simple, actually. Surely any grade schooler could answer the question. So could you. If you will recall grade school, give a bully half of your sandwich in the playground at lunchtime on Monday, and it's absolutely guaranteed that he'll be back for the entire sandwich on Tuesday. You've been listening to Why Mayors Telling Police to Let Looters and Vandals Blow Off a Little Steam Tonight So That They Will Be Calmer Tomorrow Night Only Leads to Greater Violence the Next Night With Your Old Pal, Bob. As always, I'm so honored and humbled. Now, say hello once again to Jim Barrier.
It sounded like somebody made a golf putt. I don't know if that's what that applause was. And on the music, of course, that was the great Dave Brubeck, Take Five. And before that, we had Akerbilk doing Strangers on the Shore. And I thought, we're talking about apocalyptic things. And I remembered the movie On the Beach. How's that for tying stuff together?
That's nice. Great. Nice. And we know you knew those because we played those on our show before.
Always,
and,
yeah.
And you knew them the first time. But Brendan has prepared a special one chosen just for Jim Barrier, who
pressure's
likes to
on.
Guess the tunes. Take it away, Brendan.
Really? Really?
It's not that easy.
Well, it's not Marty McFly.
That's right. Most of us will recognize we're playing in Back to the Future.
This is, I'm a guitar player, a rock and roller, and you are not allowed to be a rock and roll guitar player unless you learn the Chuck Berry riff.
Okay? Johnny Be Good.
Yeah, right
Chuck
there.
Chuck Berry, Johnny Be Good.
Playing a guitar like ringing a bell.
All right, let it go a little longer, Brendan, just to savor the moment. Oh, we got the applause back, too. We've got applause. We got Chuck Berry. We slice. We dice. And if you pay attention, you could win the matching luggage and the egg roll. All right.
Do I get the knives?
We had to lighten things up a little bit because we are living in intense times.
Thank you for that, Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon. Great
big
job.
Big fan. Nice. Good stuff. We got so much to talk about tonight. I thought about this. It's kind of relevant to the things we're doing. Did you know that some 21 churches in San Diego, including Skyline and Foothills out there, pastors all signed a letter that they sent to Governor Grusom and serving notice that on the 21st, we're going to start meeting. Thank you very much. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew that some of them were doing that. Skyline, what I'm hearing from them is that we're going to be opening soon and that they're working with the city. I know one thing that's going on is... See, what happens is it starts out as a national guideline. Then the governors put teeth in it. Sometimes the mayors put more teeth in it. But in San Diego itself, they're kind of resisting Newsom. So it really depends where in the chain of command we are. Well, you realize that returning to church means by reservation, you have to wear a mask, no more than 100 people. I don't think they're all planning to resist that.
I Well, okay. You remember.
We'll see.
Remember the prophet said it, June 21st.
I don't think they're all planning to do it. Certainly some of them will.
There's at least 20 churches, and they're the bigger churches. But we'll see what happens. But to me, I'm saying, amen, do it. I live in the great state of Texas. And our governor said, basically, we're going to do what we want. And you churches, our churches already started meeting out there.
But I have some friends in Texas. Well, you're one of them. I have friends in Texas. My son lives in Texas. Yeah. I have other friends in Texas. And they were telling me that I guess one of the things that happens that people haven't thought about is once the government eventually lays off, if it ever lays off, then the lawyers come in and start warning the churches that they will be sued. So some of my friends were going to one church mm-hmm. that was doing the reservation, mm-hmm. 6 feet apart, mask. And they are very aware that, according to Governor Abbott, they don't have to do that. So they went to another church that wasn't doing it. Is that the situation in Texas? Would you confirm that?
Well, first off, our governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general are all three Christians. And so they are very sympathetic to the churches. They're also a conservative Republican people. And so they're sympathetic to the rights of American citizens and Texas citizens. Texas is a different world from what you live in out here. So my understanding is that there, and I know pastors, churches that are already meeting. Now, if they start taking it to the law and the courts, I've been connected with the Justice Foundation out there, headquartered in San Antonio with Alan Parker Jr. That's the people we've had on here. And that's how we got Alveda King on the show.
Yes.
And so they'll have a fight on their hands. Anytime I faced any kind of thing from the city about what I was doing, Alan would call me and say, we'll take it to the Supreme Court. You want to go? And my preference was, I'll just stay under the radar here.
Of course, have they seen the recent ruling from the Supreme Court? The wind was being taken out of Governor Newsom's sail, and the Supreme Court just emboldened them because of John Roberts.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the Supreme Court on another show in depth because we have talked about that a lot. And I saw the great Francis Schaeffer way back in the 70s. Some of you remember his name. And
the book, How Shall We Then Live?
It was when that was released, and he did a whole series on it and a film series in which one of the things he did was they filmed a riot with protesters and police, and they did it with two different camera angles, the exact same scene but being filmed from different angles, and it made you sympathetic to one side
depending
or the other.
On the angle. Yeah, and our news is certainly
he was great at that. But he said Christians in America need to wake up to the fact that the most important thing that a president does is make appointments to the Supreme Court. And I took that to heart. And this is the biggest reason that I will vote for Donald Trump again and pray that he gets elected again, because there are going to be at least one, maybe two, maybe more appointments in the next 4 years.
Yeah, because otherwise Biden will make the appointments, and he doesn't even know what an appointment is, but he'll make it anyway.
No, it was with the dentist. But then I'm going to get in trouble. He's kicked out because he was sniffing.
I could just see the headline.
He was sniffing the
Biden's dentist gets nominated for the next Supreme Court position.
Oh, stop it. But I know we had some disappointments with Roberts and stuff, but I would rather have Donald Trump making appointments to the Supreme Court than anybody else that's out there.
Oh, of course.
So, of course. That's my bit about the Supreme Court. So I don't even know how we get off on these tangents, but it happens
because
every time I talk to you, Bob.
And me and today, Steve, too.
We are chemistry.
We should start a rock group called the Tangential Brothers.
Smooth.
All right. You're going to get some mail. I don't know if it'll be fan mail or hate mail, but you're going to. I want to get Steve in on this because I dragged him in here
That's right. You dragged him in. We haven't let him say a whole lot yet,
well,
have we?
He knows what he's up against. We've worked together before.
Yes, we have.
Now, can we do a complete non sequitur? Because I want to hear the story that you were telling us out in the hall about artificial intelligence. Is we okay? Can we go
with that? Oh, is this another story about Joe Biden, artificial intelligence?
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh, nice.
Where's the rim shot? Oh, Brandon, you got a rim shot in there?
That's a segue.
All right, go ahead, Steve.
This is crazy.
In the course of my business, I do a lot of tech conferences, and these typically interview CEOs or leaders in technology. In one particular event that we worked, Elon Musk was being interviewed, and he's a pretty interesting guy, regardless of your point of view. But he of him, but he kind of really sounded the alarm on where AI was going, and I found his whole presentation about it fascinating. It's got a little bit of a long story, but the short version is that he is trying to make aware and get a coalition of businesses together, because basically he was explaining that what we have in our homes and the technology that we're using today was developed in labs 4, 5, 6 years ago. And what they're doing in labs now will blow your mind, especially when it's machine learning to machine learning. And he gave a couple examples, really interesting things. But the point that really stuck with me is that he felt that it was incumbent upon all of these technology giants to provide an open source backdoor into any form of AI, just in case in some time in the future it got out of control. Like, what wouldn't respond to your shutdown commands, or was doing things that you didn't understand. And he managed to get quite a few, I won't name them, but he got quite a few technology giants to sign on this coalition that, yes, we're going to make available to anybody a backdoor into our systems. But there, he mentioned there's one company that refused. It's a giant company. I'm not going to name it, but it's refused to this day. And he admitted that it had the most advanced artificial intelligence technology on the planet. And they were doing things in their labs that would blow your mind. So we, the crew later on, during breaks and things, we were discussing this. And it's pretty profound that the number one company in the world that has gadgets in just about every home refuses to sign on to this coalition to let a safe way into their system, just in case.
And we've talked about this. I won't use any of those things. I shut them all off, as far as I know, because I grew up. I saw 2001: A Space Odyssey, and then I saw Terminator and Skynet, and then it was Matrix, and so I'm terrified of artificial intelligence.
I will say the robot from Lost in Space never frightened me much, but I'm with
Danger
you.
Will Robinson.
I'm with you with 2001 and the Terminator.
The Roomba gets me though.
He doesn't. He's not old enough to know that stuff. So I just wanted to get that story in. It didn't have anything to do with the two hot buttons, which we've been talking about, racism. Let me tell you a personal story. At a church I was at some years ago, we had a gymnasium, and we'd have open night on Tuesdays. The guys from the community would come, and we'd play pickup basketball. And it was in an area where it was a very racially mixed crowd. And in fact, I would drive downtown, and I picked up a young man, African-American young man, basketball player, with good guy, and he didn't have a car, so I'd pick him up, and we'd go over and play basketball. One night, we're playing, and a guy on my team just was getting a little out of control, and he's kind of pushing, shoving and stuff, and I said, "Hey, man, just let your game play for you. You don't have to do this." And he turns to me and says, "What is it with you people?" And I blew the whistle, and I stopped the whole thing, and I went and got my wallet and pulled out a picture of my granddaughter, who's half black. And I said, "This is my granddaughter, and I love her as much as life. I don't ever want to hear this you people stuff from you again."
It just shows how easy the stereotyping and generalization can happen from any side.
Yeah, and so he, you know, what I was talking about had nothing to do with what color a person is. It was like how you're playing the game and your sportsmanship, and just chill. But it's so volatile. You know, I live in Texas. I've been in East Texas, which is redneck central, and racism exists on all sides. But I don't consider myself a racist, you know, but it's out there. And I do know, because I live in Texas, I've seen people, they have no problem using the N-word.
Well, racism still exists in a lot of places. It's when they make this sweeping statement that every, and when they talk about how white people are racist, but other people can't be. Give me a break. I'm Jewish. Louis Farrakhan says things about the Jews that you could describe the speech to Hitler. And so when somebody tells me, "Well, you don't understand what racism is because you're white," I said, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I am of a race where 7 million of them were murdered in the 20th century in the Holocaust. And that's not even counting the 2,000 years of pogroms and synagogue burnings. But that doesn't mean that my experience is the same as the experience of somebody else who's dealing with racism. But the idea that you know. And yet, I guess technically I'm white, so that means I have this white privilege. Well, my grandparents, both grandfathers, came over here from Russia to escape the pogroms in Russia. That's that's that whole Fiddler on the Roof era. Well, and so people just don't know what they're talking about when they do these broad stereotypes.
Paint with the broad brush. Miles McPherson said it on his message this morning. We're all shades of brown, really. You know, just darker and lighter shades.
I never quite understood how flesh was called white. And the names that they give.
In the book of Acts, it talks about all of us being of one blood. And you can take a blood sample and find out if it's A or B or O, and it doesn't tell you what race a person is. So I really resent that kind of language. I know there's racism. I hate racism. You know, I pastored an inner city church, and we were really mixed up there. And but
mixed or mixed up? You meant racially mixed.
Well, it was hard to describe who and what we were. But
well, maybe the church was mixed, and you were just mixed up.
I'm pretty mixed up. Okay. But I was with people, black people, Mexican people. Now, there's a T-shirt in San Antonio that says, "Hey, I'm not Latino. I'm not Chicano. I'm a Mexican." Get it?
I know. Well, that's what's interesting is that a number of years ago I was here and don't use the word Mexican, use the word Hispanic. And
yeah,
Mexican means somebody from Mexico. And so it's interesting how the goalpost keeps changing and
all the time.
Rules keep changing.
Well, it's controlling the language.
Yeah.
George Orwell reminded us of this, or warned us about this in 1984.
Yeah. I resent that kind of stuff when I refuse to accept guilt. You were talking about it. I am not guilty for the sins of the past that someone may have committed. And I resent the pressure for me to have to feel guilty because of what white people in the past did. You know, when I have family members that are black and I love them, and I would hate for them to be abused because of their race.
Well, and the Bible, in the book of Ezekiel, everybody has this idea that the Bible says that the sins of the fathers are paid for by the children. It actually says the opposite. In Ezekiel 18, it goes out of its way to say children will not pay for their parents' sins. Parents will not pay for their children. They use the term sons and
they
fathers,
had,
but
yeah.
they, you know, the same
They had
sentiment.
A proverb. It said, "The fathers have eaten grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge." And he rebuked them. He said, "Israel shall not use this." And then he went on to say, each generation is responsible for its own.
That's right. Exactly.
So, I'm big on that stuff.
Well, the way I look at it, there's enough sins I'm really guilty of that I'm going to go take on something that I haven't done just because. And Christians get guilt trips put on them so quickly because we already believe that we're sinners, and sometimes people go into the church with low self-esteem.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say, well, if you're guilty of sin, why can't you confess this one? And again, sin is our joint heritage. We're all sinful. None of us deserve to be in heaven. All of us deserve to be in hell. This is what the Bible teaches. But we've all committed different sins. I have not committed the same sins as you, Jim, although I'd love to know what some of yours are, if you want to tell me afterwards.
Well, because
I won't mention it on the show next week. I promise.
Well,
trust me.
In James, it says if you're guilty of one point of the law, you're guilty of the whole law.
Well, we all have.
And the law is we've broken the law of loving God supremely and loving our neighbor unselfishly. And Paul says it. He says, whether it's adultery or stealing or murder or any other law, as if there was a law Paul didn't know.
What that means is we haven't all broken the same laws. It just means if we've broken even one, we've been disqualified from going to heaven.
Yeah.
We can't go in there and say, well, I didn't break this one. God will say, look, if you even break one, I'm such a holy God, I can't let you into heaven.
You're guilty.
The good news is he loves everybody. And because of the atonement of Jesus, he wants to let everybody into heaven.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, because in the circles where this is a conservative station show, everything, we pick on a couple of things that we like to ride as hobby horses, sins in this country. And I'll just tell you this. I don't know many pastors out there that are willing to get up and say, if two single Christians, a man and a woman, are sleeping together, cohabitating, that's a sin. And you need to change and quit doing that. No, but if it's two gay men, oh, you're out of here. But we don't pick on people that are, you know, committing adultery or committing
Yeah, we cherry picked this. And I do think the church made a great mistake and treated the gay community very cruelly when they were first coming out of the closet. Not because the Bible doesn't say that homosexuality is a sin, but because it's one of many sins. And of course, these days, what's happened is the church lost so much credibility that now they finally learned, okay, we can love the sinner, hate the sin, but that doesn't matter anymore.
We've used that
now
rhetoric.
We say we love the sinner, they say, it doesn't matter, you're all hate mongers. So the message has gotten distorted. But I do think there's some guilt on the part of, and I think this was real guilt on the part of Christians, because they were treating gay people like second-class citizens, and that's unfair.
I think it's something that we will have already paid the price, but I think there is some reckoning on the level between God and his people that we have been unjust in that respect. And like I say, I'm not justifying any sin, but hey, you know, gluttony is a sin. I used to be a member of a denomination, a large denomination, and I went to the general council meeting where they're from all over the world. I never saw more size 50 three-piece suits in one building. And I thought, well, they ain't preaching about that one, are they?
Well, now, Jim, I appreciate the fact that you won't overlook anybody's sin or rationalize anybody's sin, but you can at least rationalize and overlook mine, right? I mean, well, let's not become a fanatic.
Not only do I not know what yours is, I don't want to know.
you probably don't.
Oh, man. So we were all over the place.
Oh, there we go. No, somebody made a joke.
Oh, the rim shot.
That was the old rim shot, yeah.
Brandon's all over the program.
Very good, Brendan.
Yeah.
In the age of COVID, in the age of lockdowns, in the age of rioting and quote peaceful protest, we are being asked, well, what kind of decisions do we make in light of these things? Whether
right.
you're a business owner,
good.
Whether you are a family man struggling to pay your bills. And when you told me lightly what some of the subject matter would be today, I thought about it long and hard, and I keep coming back that we are being manipulated, and primarily by the media. The information that is left out is more important than the information that they're putting in.
Wow.
We're hearing
sins of omission.
You're hearing manipulated statistics.
Yeah.
You know, we're told that, hospitals are being inundated at first, and you have to bring in mercy ships. And we have to stop everything we're doing. And yet, I know firsthand, I work in hospitals, that's not true.
Yeah.
There's entire staffs laid off because there's nothing to do. And hospitals are empty. And the amount of COVID patients follow the very thing that we're being told, that it's mostly elderly and compromised.
Right.
And have pre-existing conditions. It's rarely, you have a better chance of getting a car wreck on the way home tonight and getting COVID at our ages.
And I think it's really virtually zero at 12 and under.
Yes.
Children aren't getting this and dying.
Rarely.
So, and they may be carrying it. I don't know. There's so much that's unknown, but I've heard that from so many sources.
I do think people are getting it and carrying it, but except for the precondition and ages, it's just not the lethal thing people have made it out to be.
Well, and a guy's 96 and he dies and you say, well, it's COVID related.
Right. Well, that's a whole other subject of all the false tags that were put on people. I just think one of the more powerful things we can do, because I'm often wondering this myself, what can we do?
Yeah.
We are all aware that we're being manipulated. We're all aware that they're telling half stories. A good friend of mine who lives in Spokane, Chris, sent me a text just a couple days ago about some rioting that happened in Spokane and some citizens in Coeur d'Alene, just about 30 minutes, from his house, were rising up. You could call them patriots or whatever you want to call them, but they were local citizens that armed themselves in downtown Coeur d'Alene, and they basically put a stop to it. They're not going to let this happen here. And the press came in, and they manipulated an entire story of how, quote, business owners, it was in plural, were, quote, concerned about these, you know, armed citizenry. I read the article myself, and it turns out the concerned businesses was one tattoo artist, one tattoo parlor owner who felt like she was uncomfortable with a bunch of armed people around. Yet not one shot was fired, not one window was broken.
Right.
Families could take their children out for a walk on the sidewalks, go out to restaurants and all that. It was totally peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the media manipulated that story was to make it sound like business owners were up in arms that all of a sudden these armed vigilantes were everywhere. And that wasn't the story at all.
They're twisting it.
So people say, well, what can we do? We know we're being manipulated. What can we do? And the single thing I can only think of is cut your cord. Cut your cord. Shut it off.
Yeah.
We cut our cord three and a half years ago. Yeah. We don't watch mainstream media.
Yeah.
What is it? $2.70 of every cable bill goes to CNN, whether you watch them or not. It's all part of their franchise.
And when you
fees.
Go to an airport, what's always on?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, there's 12 people at airports watching CNN.
Well, even when there were more people at airports, and of course, they found that ratings wise, Fox News does better than CNN and MSNBC together. Yeah. But the conservative people are not going to go and whine and make a big deal and threaten to sue the airport if they don't air Fox News, and they know it, so they air CNN.
Too polite.
So what else do we do?
Well, you know, the internet is both good and bad. It's like
always.
Anything else, you know.
Yeah.
My website, good.
Obviously.
We weren't talking about that.
I don't know how I left
since
that
we're
out.
Doing a checklist on each side.
I think it's, unfortunately, there's always going to be people that are not going to do this, but it's up to each individual to do due diligence and to fact check. And I'm guilty of sometimes throwing stuff out that I didn't do due diligence. Mm-hmm. I admit it. But it's up to us to determine where you're getting. I mean, I can tell within 4 or 5 minutes of talking with someone if we're having even a light political discussion of where they're getting their information from. And it works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that mostly, not always, I don't want to generalize, but mostly conservatives seemed a little bit more informed on certain subjects than you would think, that they have a better understanding of mm-hmm. a bigger picture. Mm. That doesn't mean they're always correct in their assumptions. I'll give you that. But I can tell within a few minutes by how a person responds to something you say, where they're getting that information from.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they're getting, by and large, a whole lot of people today are getting one-sided or very distorted or half-truth information.
Yeah.
The media manipulates constantly. So my advice, cut the cord. Do your own homework. Even double check if you have the time, your own homework.
Yeah.
But and by the way,
quit giving your money to these entities that are against the things that you believe
in.
And fact check the fact checkers. I go to factcheck.org and sometimes they're not, or they'll even admit, they'll say, well, this was said, it wasn't emphasized. And so they label it false, but if you read their whole article, they were admitting it was true. And so who fact checks the fact checkers?
Yeah, that's just, a lot of it's bogus. I like that, and we did that. We don't have cable TV, period, in our house.
Good.
And I'm very careful about what I believe that I read online, but the Bob Siegel Show, you're going to get truth.
No. There it is. I was waiting for it. There it is.
No.
There is nothing that promotes the Bob Siegel Show more than the people on the Bob Siegel
self-promotion. And then be conscientious. Get educated, be conscientious, and back to the thing, just keep praying, folks. And even if you don't feel like you can be an activist, you can pray.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, it's always a pleasure to have you. It's good to have you actually in the studio. I guess you're back to the phone next time, but we'll take you any way that we can take you. And Steve, what a pleasure to meet you.
You're
a great
Bob.
Guy, and I'm glad you live in San Diego. We have to get together. I'm sure there's 3 or 4 restaurants open somewhere in town that we could go and have
Let's
a cup
do it.
Of coffee.
He knows All where
right.
they are.
Yes.
All right, my friends. Ladies and gentlemen, I will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.